Good morning. Thanks for joining us. You know, we think about the choices that we make every day, or sometimes we don't think about them, but think about a choice you made recently, any choice, which breakfast to buy, a movie to see, or more important decisions, like which political candidate to support or a career to pursue. Why did you pick the particular option you ended up choosing? Seems like an easy question. The notion that our choices are driven by our own personal preferences and opinions seems so obvious, but it's not even worth mentioning. But guess what? It's wrong. Invisible influence, the hidden forces that shape behavior. And the author, who is a marketing professor at the Wharton School, Jonah Berger, joins us this morning. How are you this morning?
Great. Thanks so much for having me.
Amazing book. You know, it really opens your eyes to your life. Literally, you go back and go, okay, when I made that decision, who was I being influenced by, or what was I being influenced by? It's amazing. Why did you decide to write this book?
It's interesting. Influence is around us all the time, yet we almost never see it. Mm-hmm. We never understand how it affects us. I was from Washington, D.C. I was back home talking to a friend of mine. And I was saying I was interested in social influence. And they said, oh, yeah, I see influence all the time. You know, lawyers in Washington, D.C., they all go out there, they make it big, they hit partner, and they buy a BMW to show everybody they've made it. Mm-hmm. And when I said, well, that's funny, but, you know, aren't you a lawyer in D.C.? My friend is a lawyer. And I said, and don't you drive a BMW?
Right.
And he said, oh, yeah, but, you know, I drive a blue one.
Right.
Everyone else drives
right.
gray ones.
Right, right. I thought that story was funny.
What I love about that example is, you know, sometimes we see influence. We do. Mm-hmm. We see other people dressing the same or listening to the same music, but there's one place we never see it, and that's ourselves.
Right.
We never notice how it affects us. And second, you know, it's not just one flavor of influence. It's not just that we all do the same thing as others.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we do the complete opposite of what everyone else is doing, or sometimes we do something that's similar and different at the same time. And so the more we understand these influences and how they affect us, the more we can use them to live happier and healthier lives.
That is so interesting. Now, I'm the opposite person. Like my brother has a Mercedes. My aunt has a Infiniti. My dad has an Infiniti. I'm a BMW girl. So, you know, and they're like, BMW, why are you have a BMW? Because that's what I like. But I think that I always want to make sure that I'm not doing what somebody else is doing. And that's influence as well, right?
It is. You know, sometimes we think about influence as just doing the same, but mm-hmm. influence is kind of like a magnet. Sometimes it attracts and it leads us to do the same thing as others, but sometimes it repels. Like your car choice, for example, might lead us to do something different. You know, we've all had that experience. You're out to dinner with a group of people and someone orders the entree mm-hmm. you were thinking about ordering. Well, what do? Do you stick with your guns and order the entree you were thinking of getting, or do you pick something else? It turns out that a lot of times we end up picking something else because mm-hmm. we want to be different, mm-hmm. but we end up being less happy or less satisfied as a result. We pick something different because we want to stand out. We want to feel unique. But in that particular case, we should have stuck with what we wanted to pick previously.
Exactly. Exactly. I think that as I was reading a book, it made me think about the generation. Like I have two sons, 26, 28. And this generation, they just want to do their own thing. They want to be different. Not realizing, though, that parents still have influence. How you were raised still has an influence on you. Who you hang out with still has an influence on you. But yet, you know, they think they created everything and it's all different. It's just a funny thing to see.
Yeah, you know, and we all focus on ways that we're different. Mm-hmm. Particularly in American culture, we love to see ourselves as unique. You know, everyone's a unique and special snowflake that's different from everybody else. And we go to Starbucks and, you know, or Burger King, and we have it our way, and we get it exactly how mm-hmm. we want it. But we don't realize that we're actually pretty similar. You know, if you look at people, they often dress the same way as their friends,
mm-hmm.
Or they have similar political views, they like similar music, they engage in similar activities. And so really, we end up being similar and different at the same time. We're navigating these two poles, and we often want to be optimally distinct somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. Can you discuss right now the whys and the influence of this political race? I look at that all the time, the influence on both sides, and then the people who follow them, sometimes a lot different.
You know, certainly. And I think a lot of this recent political race is less about what someone stands for
mm-hmm.
and more what they stand against. People vote for one candidate or another because they seem against something rather than for something. You know, a lot of the Trump supporters or Bernie Sanders supporters are voting for those candidates because they seem against the establishment. Mm-hmm. They seem outside the normal kind of party system. But what we vote is not just about the issues. It's also about what something signals or communicates about us. I was working with a group that's trying to get clean energy, so like solar power and wind power, to catch on among Republicans, among conservatives. And so they were looking around trying to understand why conservatives don't support solar and wind energy. And it seems like something they should support, right? It saves us money.
Makes sense.
It's good for national security, but people don't like it. And then they asked around, they found there was one simple reason. When people were asked, they said, oh, conservatives said, well, clean energy, isn't that something Al Gore likes?
Wow.
Al Gore likes it, and I'm a conservative.
Right, they're against it. Right.
And so much of our choices are not just about what they do, but what does it signal about us from voting? Mm-hmm. What does it signal about us from the car we drive? What does it say about us or communicate about us to others to do one thing versus another? And sometimes we adopt things because we like the people that are associated with a given choice or behavior, and sometimes we avoid things because of the type of people that are associated with a choice or behavior.
You know, you talk about that in the chapter, similar but different, you know, something old, something new. You talk about, you give a lot of history in this book, which is fascinating as well. Love history. And talking about the U.S. presidents and, you know, who they are, who they aren't, you know, something old, something new. And a lot of times it's kind of the same, right?
You know, it is. And things don't change as quickly as we might think or sometimes we might like. Mm-hmm. If you look at what products are successful, for example, you know, or what ideas succeed, they're often not completely different than what came previously. Again, and we love to think of ourselves as different, as, you know, unique and nonconformist, different from everybody else. But if you look at what succeeds, whether it's baby names, colors, car styles, even music, it's often a slow evolution from what's been popular recently, similar but different at the same time. So, you know, maybe it'll be a similar beat but with slightly different lyrics, or, you know, a similar shade of the color that's been popular recently. Or even in baby names, for example, we find that the names that become most popular tend to be similar to the names that were popular last year. So if, let's say, Carl's a really popular name one year, then next year the names that are popular tend to have similar sounds. So Carl starts with a C, but that sound of cuz has a hard sound at the beginning. So, you know, Catherine and Katie and Kim can be more popular in the years that follow because it has a similar sound pattern. And so a lot of times what becomes popular, whether it's from presidential candidates to the products we buy, are optimally distinct, similar from what's been popular recently, but different at the same time.
Because that's what you say, that if you're doing a new product, don't make it all the way new, you know, have some new in it, but kind of the same as before, or people won't accept it, or it'll take a long time for acceptance.
Yeah. And you know, that when we're trying to sell our own ideas, when we're trying to get something to catch on within the organization we work on, a new product, you know, sometimes we think it's all about saying how different it is, but really we've got to make it seem similar as well. If it seems too different, people won't know how to use it.
Right.
They won't understand how it fits with what they're doing already. Mm-hmm. But the more they can make it feel something they're a part of, something they've been doing already, the more likely it will be to succeed.
And it's so true, because when a new product comes out, you go, oh yeah, that's sort of like so-and-so, or that's like this product, or it's like that. And you feel okay about using it, that it won't get you out of your box of not knowing what to do. You're exactly right about that. In the chapter, Come On Baby Light My Fire, this was a little quirky, fascinating thing about the cockroaches. So tell that story for a moment.
Yeah, so scientists were interested in what motivates people and animals, what helps us perform better and worse. So I actually looked at cockroaches, and they had cockroaches run races. So imagine you have a cockroach running from, you know, one side of a box to another to try to get out of the way of the light. They timed how fast cockroaches ran. They found that when running, cockroaches ran faster when other cockroaches were around.
That was funny.
So if there's like almost a little cockroach audience watching the cockroach run, they ran faster. And it turns out the same with people. So from running to biking, any sort of working out, exercise, even stuff at the office, having others around can make us do it faster or better. You know, when we're tying our shoes, for example, someone watching us makes us tie our shoes faster. When we're running or exercising, having others around makes us do it better or faster
That's
as well. But same with the cockroaches. There are some cases where there's hurt, Others make us do things worse. Mm-hmm. You ever had, you know, parallel parked when someone else is in the car, or try to tie a bow tie when someone else is watching you? Sometimes it's harder when others are around. And it turns out for things we're good at, like running or like cockroaches just running straight across a box, having others around helps us do it faster or better. But for things that are tough, things that we're not so good at, well, others make us actually worse. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're parallel parking, having someone else in the car makes us park slower. Mm-hmm. We're trying to do something complicated. Having others watch us makes us do worse. And so if we're trying to motivate ourselves or motivate teams, think about how to use peers to do that. You know, how can we compare people to others to encourage them to work harder? But make sure we're doing that in domains that are easy products or tasks for them to do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And in the last chapter, you talk about putting social influence to work, because the more we understand it, the better we will be able to make it work for us. So talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, so there was some great research that looked at what happened when people move.
I love
when they move from one community to another. Mm-hmm. And what they found is moving to a better community, neighborhood, sort of a better neighborhood surrounded by peers that are happier and healthier, makes individuals happier and healthier as well. People that move to better communities had better health outcomes, better job outcomes, better life outcomes. And you know, we often don't think about it, but the people we surround ourselves with and the people we let our kids surround themselves with have a big impact on how we and how our children and families turn out. From everything from the products we buy to the big decisions we make, often those decisions are subtly and importantly shaped by those around us. And so we need to consider our surroundings and make sure we understand these influences. How can we take advantage of influence? Sometimes people help us make better choices or easier choices than we would otherwise. If we imagine we could never look online at movie reviews, for example, or never talk to friends before picking up a new album, life would be much tougher. And so sometimes people help us. But just as often, they can lead us astray. They can lead us to make worse choices or fall prey to groupthink when we make decisions in groups. And so we need to understand these influences, understand the upsides and the downsides, and how we can take advantage of them. If we understand influence, we can choose our own influence, and we can live better lives.
Absolutely. Invisible Influence, the Hidden Forces That Shape Behavior. The author is Jonah Berger. Thank you so much for joining us. And is there a website attached?
Sure, yeah. Folks can find me at Jonah, that's just J-O-N-A-H, Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R.com. They can find all about the book, and there's a bunch of free resources to help you apply these ideas, everything from being more influential to motivating yourself and others.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Awesome. Thank you.